This is our number two.
It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
I just saw something that made me laugh. I'll share it with you. Coming to you from the Carter Super Studio. Welcome. It's World of News in a tiny little 15-minute package just for you. Welcome to our Fastest 15. And, Nicole, as you know, we are the highest-rated local news talk show in the United States of America.
We are?
Yeah. Yes.
You've mentioned it a time or two.
Yeah. Well, it's something to be very, very proud of. But here's what I've come to realize. About 80 to 90% of our audience is just, they're fantastic. And they, of course, make up the bulk of those ratings. But then about 10 to 20% are just apparently somewhat dim-witted. And they make up a chunk of our audience. I was just checking out the text messages. Carrie writes, "Unfortunately, I was slow to reach my phone to switch it off after the 12 p.m. news. Stuck with Dory for a few. Used to listen and hope springs eternal. Nope, God knows we're short on presentation of news." She sent that at 12:18. So she couldn't figure out how to turn off audio on her phone in 18 minutes. And all I'm saying is I am so appreciative of not only our great, loyal, fantastic listeners who like the show, I am very appreciative of the dim-witted haters of the show who can't figure out how to turn off a radio.
Acting dim-witted.
They're not actually dim-witted because we don't name call. But yes, their actions are those who are dim of wit. But that doesn't make them dim-wits. I don't want anybody to think that it does. But yeah, it's always, my husband left the car radio on 97.3 last night. And when I got in the car to run an errand, I was disappointed to hear Dory Monson's voice. And then they go on to critique about a 10-minute segment of the show. And I love that. I love those who act dim of wit. So thank you. I just want to say thank you to all those people who help make us the highest-rated local news talk show in the United States of America. It's just so much, so much fun. Gosh, this is a fun job. All right, let's get into the festival. This was a rough. Did you? What'd you do this weekend? I don't know if I asked you.
No, I went to the Husky game, which they were playing ASU, which is my the team that I normally root for because I went there. But I get quite torn because I also root for the local teams. I mean, if I'm at a UW game, I root for UW. If I'm at a Wazoo game, I root for Wazoo. But I can root for both. I decided so. So, yeah, I was at that game, and it was, I mean, it was miserable if you were not undercover, but thankfully I was.
Okay.
And then it was kind of slow until the end there. But, yeah.
So they lost. Huskies lost. Then they fired their coach, Jimmy Lake, yesterday after only 13 games. The Cougs lost. The Seahawks lost to fall to 3-6.
Yeah.
The Kraken, I was looking. They have the second worst record in out of 32 teams in the NHL.
You know, they're just figuring it out.
Exactly. Everybody's figuring stuff out. It's just, it's going to be challenging.
Tough times in PNW.
What's that?
Tough times in the PNW for sports fans right now.
And ticket prices for things are very, very expensive. And it's just, it's going to be interesting to see how these things play out. As long, you know, our economy is still struggling a fair amount. We still have not made a full economic comeback. Inflation raging at 6%. I'll get into some of that a little later here in the Fast 15. Aaron Rodgers quarterbacked the Green Bay Packers to victory over the Seahawks. And Aaron Rodgers, of course, unvaccinated. He tested negative for COVID on Saturday, so he was cleared to play. But he took all this heat because he said he was immunized, but he wasn't vaccinated. And then once he, they found out that he wasn't vaccinated, well, everybody went berserk on this guy. And you know, guys like Howard Stern were saying, he should be thrown out of the league. If I ran the NFL, I would throw him out of the league. And they were saying, well, you know, he's in a huddle, and he's just inches away from his teammate's face. And, of course, a few days ago, Bill Gates said, yeah, we have new proof that vaccination isn't transmitted through the air to from the vaccinated. So after the game, he was a little emotional, though, because he was talking about the people who supported his right to have freedom over his body choice.
A lot of emotions for sure. Good to be back with the guys. Good to be back at home. Good to be on the field, really. Most emotions from the whole night was probably walking off the field after the game. Definitely got me a little misty. I'm just focusing on the support that I got. And it was deep and wide and greatly, greatly appreciated. There's always going to be criticism in this world. I don't define myself by the criticism. But I understand it's a part of this because this issue is definitely polarizing.
Sure is, man. But we're told something new and different every couple of weeks. If you're just joining us, Anthony Fauci, this weekend, he said that the vaccinations don't seem to be working. Now everybody's going to have to get that third booster shot, which is exactly what Pfizer and Moderna want to hear so that they can keep the revenues coming in. But it's not like a lot of vaccinations. You know, people say, well, polio and cured polio. Yeah, this isn't like polio. It's still, you know, they're still learning about it. And that's why I think it's reasonable for some people to have questions about it still.
Absolutely. Just to be clear, because you mentioned the Bill Gates cut, and what Bill Gates said is that you still transmit it even when you're vaccinated because the vaccines aren't working the way they were hoping that they would. And you said you can't. I don't know what you said, but you didn't say that.
Bill Gates said we have to rethink the mandates. That's probably, yes. That's more precise. And I appreciate you catching me on that, because that's what Bill Gates said. But, you know, we've been told for months and months and months that the mandates are saving lives. And, you know, Bill Gates last week said now the new evidence is that the mandates do not stop the transmission, even among the vaccinated.
Correct.
So that's a good clarification. Yeah. And you said we have to rethink the mandates. It changes every 40 seconds sometimes. So yes. It's a frustrating, frustrating issue. All right, next up in the Fastest 15, just think how much fraud has been part of these government bailouts. Because, you know, the government has, and the state of Washington, the federal government and the state of Washington, they've sent out all of these pandemic-related economic boosters through Employment Security, which is a nightmare of an office. And we just found out that they've paid out, state of Washington has paid out $647 million in pandemic fraud claims, you know, the Nigerian scammers. And now it's not just Nigerians, apparently. Prosecutors today are alleging that, or this is the federal Department of Justice, two Seattleites, Brian Sparks and Autumn Luna, they've been charged with stealing $500,000 in jobless benefits from state ESD and $520,000 in Small Business Administration loans. And the thing you wonder is, for every person who's caught, how many go uncaught that have been stealing things? 10, 20, 50? I don't know. But I guarantee these aren't the only ones who are stealing. And then, how about this? We've had these stories every once in a while where cities have been scammed by fraudsters, and now City of Seattle is the latest one. And here's the way the scam works. The scammers pick some agency, and they replicate their letterhead, they replicate their website, and then they contact the city and say, hey, we have a new bank arrangement. We send the checks in the future too, blah, blah, blah. And they're very, very good at their fraud. So now it's happened when some scammers purporting to be Mary's Place Shelter. My wife and I are we're supporters of Mary's Place that help women and children in domestic violence situations. And the Amazon buildings downtown have provided space for Mary's Place. I think it's a real good. And our buddy Saul Spady, you didn't go to that ping pong tournament that Saul did a couple years ago, did you, Nicole?
Yes, I did.
Oh, were you there? Okay.
Yes,
yeah,
I did.
Saul, my wife and I went to that, and so did my girls, in fact. And that was to benefit Mary's Place. And it was really nice. It was a nice event that Saul put together, too. But Mary's Place, I really believe in. Well, this is how stinky some individuals are. They claim to be Mary's Place. They somehow contacted the city of Seattle and said, hey, because city of Seattle makes donations to Mary's Place. And they said, hey, send the donations to our new banking. Here's the routing number, all that. And the city of Seattle sends off $800,000. $800,000 of your and my dollars. So that, and it's gone. It's gone. And the city of Seattle says, oh, we'll make it up. We'll send them another $800,000 to make up for it. Well, that's our money. And maybe the person who got scammed, just maybe, that person should be fired when you're responsible for nearly $1 million theft right under your nose because you couldn't check, you couldn't pick up the phone, call some trusted, reliable contact at Mary's Place and say, hey, we just got this this email, this letter saying we should change our bank information for you guys when we send in money. One phone call to somebody you trust. Call the spokesperson before you send out another penny when you get something like that. Because this is happening all the time now. And it happens because government employees are too lazy to do even the most basic amount of due diligence before they send off $1 million of your and my money. And there is one other issue, too. I don't think that government should be sending money to charities. I think we should. I think that, like I said, I support Mary's Place. I just think the government collecting our money, and then they take all of their bureaucracy, which probably whittles away about 80% of the tax dollars we've paid to them, and then they give maybe 20 cents on the dollar to the charity. I'd like to know. The tax dollars that the city of Seattle collected from you and me, how many millions was it so that they could send $800,000 to Mary's Place? When my wife and I decide on what charities to support, I've talked about this, there are some great websites that tell you what the administrative costs are. And we prefer to have at least 90% of the money go to the actual cause. 80% bare minimum. But government, as the most inefficient of enterprises, they just hire a bunch of people, give them big six-figure salaries, and then hardly any of our money actually gets to the charity. But then they can say, oh, look, we support Mary's Place. It is the most inefficient way to fund a charity. Hey, City of Seattle, King County, State of Washington, federal government, let us keep more of our own money, and then you're going to find that people are pretty generous. And we'll help out the charities that we want to help out instead of having government take its huge share of all of that. But nobody will be fired. I've talked to many small towns that this has happened to, and nobody ever gets fired by these things. All right, let's check out Joe Biden. He's the president of the United States. He was on stage at an event this weekend, and I think he was expecting some other people to be up on stage. Because Joe usually has people who have to kind of walk him through every second of what he's doing, his handlers. So this got awkward.
You know, here we go. Where is everybody? Joe.
Jill's here, the attorney general. We got the dog. Everybody's there. All right, Jill. I don't know what was going on back there, but I...
He was a little scared when he was on stage all by himself. So he had to call out for his wife to be by his side. And, you know, we all know what that's all about. The poll numbers are awful. New polling that came out this weekend show that Biden's approval is at a new low. 38%. He's very near Trump level. Networks generally don't talk about it, but they can't ignore it now. Here are all the morning shows. This is CBS Good Morning Today Show and Good Morning America Today.
A new poll shows the president's approval rating is at an all-time low. Just 41% of those surveyed said that they approve of the president's job performance. 53% said they do not approve.
But his approval rating taking another nosedive and his Build Back Better agenda in major doubt.
Whit, this is a devastating poll for Joe Biden and the Democratic Party, and it paints a portrait of a party that appears disconnected from people's lives. Broad perception, more than 62% say that Democrats are not standing for people like them.
A Washington Post ABC News poll shows President Biden's approval rating ticking down to 41%, fueled by concerns over inflation.
Even losing support among Democrats and independents.
We've been asking this question for 40 years, Whit, and we have never seen Republicans with this wide a margin in that so-called generic ballot question.
Yeah, the networks, they need to distance themselves from Joe Biden now. They spent 4 years trying to get Joe Biden into the White House, and now they recognize that he's in much worse disaster than Donald Trump was. Inflation has hit a 30-year high. Gas prices in California just hit an all-time high, $4.59 a gallon for regular, not for premium. Gas prices are up 60%. Food at the grocery store, it's amazing. But on NBC, Stephanie Ruhle, their phony economist, she said, oh, no, it's okay, because we can afford inflation, you and me.
And the dirty little secret here, Willie,
should have been you and I. Hated when I do that.
And the dirty little secret here, Willie, while nobody likes to pay more, on average, we have the money to do so. Household savings hit a record high over the pandemic. We didn't really have anywhere to go out and spend. And as we said a moment ago, we're expecting retail sales this holiday season to break records. For those who own their homes, the value of our homes are up. And while the stock market...
Okay, I'm sorry. So we can afford 30-year high inflation. That's the good news. Because our savings is up. So you should just dip into your savings account so that you can pay for the mess that Joe Biden's made of this economy. And then I love it when she said, and housing prices are at an all-time high. So how does that help people pay for food at the supermarket, Stephanie Ruhle? Do you want them to take out a home equity loan so they'll have cash for food? Or do you want them to sell their house so they'll have cash for food? Because home values at an all-time high is on paper only. It doesn't translate into families being able to handle 30-year runaway inflation. But this is, and she's like their economic analyst on NBC. It's amazing. And that is your Fastest 15.
This has been the Fastest 15 Minutes in the News. Fast. Dory's Fastest 15.
Give us 15 minutes, we'll give you the world. Speaking of amazing... the Rittenhouse trial going on right now in Kenosha, Wisconsin. The prosecution made its closing arguments a couple of hours ago. The defense is making its closing arguments. You wait till you hear what this prosecutor said. It's maybe the worst closing argument in the history of jurisprudence. It's coming up next, right after we check the news here of the Dory Monson. Yeah, I've been bragging a lot about our ratings. Because I'm a competitive guy, and I'm really, I'm very thankful for you. And I also recognize, and this is what I would like to see more of in the media. I don't consider myself part of the mainstream media, because I'm not forced by any corporate entity to think a certain way. all of the other major networks, you know, ABC, NBC, CBS, MSNBC, CNN, you must think a certain way. It is mandated, and they're all collapsing because of it. And think about the stories. I'm going to bring this around to the Rittenhouse trial, which final arguments are being heard as we speak right now. Think of all the stories that the mainstream media got completely wrong. The 2016 election. Remember all their predictions of how that was going to turn out. The Covington, Kentucky kids. The racist kids who smirked at a Native American. White supremacy kids. Yeah, the kids won a lawsuit. Sandman won a lawsuit against CNN. Russian collusion was a completely made-up story. The Steele dossier, completely made-up story. Washington Post admitted that a few days ago, after the Washington Post has talked about it incessantly for years now. Jussie Smollett, the guy who was accosted by white supremacists in Chicago. Pulse nightclub shooting, which they said was an anti-gay attack. No, it was a Islamic terror attack. The Atlanta shootings was an Asian hate crime. No, it was this person who couldn't control his sexual obsessions and killed who he thought he needed to cure himself of that. Hunter Biden's laptop. Completely ignored leading up to the election. Inflation has been ignored. The University of Virginia rape trial. Remember that? Bunch of kids, they were certain, were guilty of rape. Duke lacrosse. Another completely made-up media story. Hands up, don't shoot. Michael Avenatti. The Brian Sicknick fire extinguisher. No border crisis. All made up. And I say all of this because I am fascinated by this Kyle Rittenhouse trial, where I don't understand why there are people who seem to be taking political sides on this. Or many are saying that's a white supremacy issue. When Kyle Rittenhouse is white and the three people he shot are white. I don't understand that angle. And also, let's also remember that maybe the only reason that Kenosha burned was because the media completely got wrong the precipitating event. And that was a guy named Jacob Blake. And the first stories were that he had been called to an ex's house and he was going to just break up a fight. Didn't talk about the restraining order, didn't talk about how he wrestled with the cops, how he had a knife in his hand for days, even after it was proven he had a knife in his hand. Many mainstream media outlets said the police shot an unarmed man, and that led to the rioting in the streets of Kenosha, and that led to the moments where Kyle Rittenhouse killed two people and seriously injured a third. The prosecutor in this case gave his final arguments. Earlier, the judge dismissed the weapons charge because last week, when the guy who got shot and lived, when he admitted that he had a loaded Glock pointed at Kyle Rittenhouse when Rittenhouse shot him, I mean, as classic a case of self-defense as you will ever have. And the prosecutor buried his face in his hands and was shaking his head no. Like, I know he just lost. They said, well, maybe we can just get him on the weapons charge. Nope.
The information contains six counts of charged unlawful behavior against the defendant, and to each of these he has entered a plea of not guilty, which is a demand that the state prove every element of each crime beyond a reasonable doubt. Self-defense is an issue in this case, as to and I might interject here, count six is no longer part of your consideration. That was the firearm charge. So that will not be something that you will need to address. You'll need to address only the first five counts. At the beginning of the trial, I described the charges against the defendant, counts six and seven, which respectively charge possession of a firearm by a minor and curfew violation. have been disposed of and are no longer part of this case. The other counts remain. Do not guess about or concern.
Okay, so those are the only things. They thought maybe we can get them on the weapons charge or the curfew. And then we find out from the prosecutor, this is a remarkable claim. He said, well, no, he can't claim self-defense because he brought the gun.
Convince you that Joseph Rosenbaum was going to take that gun and use it on the defendant because they know you can't claim self-defense against an unarmed man like this. You lose the right to self-defense when you're the one who brought the gun, when you're the one creating the danger, when you're the one provoking other people.
Okay, but if somebody's wrestling the gun away from you, and there was testimony that the guy who got shot had his hand on the muzzle of the gun because of the powder burns on his hand when he was found dead, and he had said to bleeping kill you, multiple witnesses said that, and he charged at Kyle Rittenhouse. And that guy's a convicted child molester, by the way. Now, the prosecutor, this is where I say, this is the most amazing thing I've heard. He said, maybe I'll say, I'll play it for you right after the break. You do not miss it. I don't care what you have planned for the next 15 minutes, but change them because you have to hear this. So the prosecutor says, plus he just never should have shot this guy because this guy just wasn't that bad, the convicted child molester. It's amazing audio. I'll play it for you coming up next here on the Dory Monson Show. The closing arguments by the prosecution and the defense. Prosecution went a little earlier. The defense right now is making its closing arguments, and then the jury will decide if that 17-year-old Kyle Rosenhaus will go to prison for the three men he shot. The second man he shot and killed was swinging a skateboard at his head at the time. That's a deadly weapon. That's clear self-defense. The guy whose arm he nearly blew off was pointing a loaded Glock at Kyle Rittenhouse when he shot him. Clearly self-defense. The one they're really trying to make is this convicted multiple-time child molester who, listen to the prosecutor. He was talking about what that guy, and this is the guy who said to Rittenhouse, I'm going to bleeping kill you, and according to witnesses, ran, grabbed the muzzle of his gun after threatening to kill him, and that's when Rittenhouse fired. But listen to the prosecutor talking about what that guy was doing before he got shot. And the prosecutor's tone of voice makes everything sound like, oh, it's not, none of this should matter. And it was really unbelievable to sit and listen to.
So I'm going to tell you a little bit about Joseph Rosenbaum, and you've heard some testimony about him. He had been in the hospital, left it that day, had a clear plastic bag with his possessions, toiletries, a water bottle. We've all seen this. You get it in the hospital. It's pretty common. He's walking around like it's pretty much his only possession in the world. He visits Carrie Ann Swart, his girlfriend, and then happens to wander downtown into the middle of civil unrest. No indication he planned to be there. No indication he's part of any sort of movement. He just happens to stumble into it. So what does he do that night? Oh, let me tell you all the awful things Joseph Rosenbaum did. He tipped over a porta potty that had no one in it. He swung a chain. He lit a metal garbage dumpster on fire.
Hear this tone of voice. See, none of these things matter. And anybody who says that it's bad, but he's just using his sarcastic tone, and it gets better or worse, depending on how you look at it.
Oh, and there's this empty wooden flatbed trailer that they pulled out in the middle of the road, and they tipped it over to stop some bearcats, and they lit it on fire. Oh, and he said some bad words. He said the N-word.
I could not believe my ears when I heard that. In almost any other case, you would try to distance your closing argument from somebody who's clearly a racist if they're saying the N-word. But the tone of, oh, and he said some naughty words. He said the N-word, and then he's wagging his finger while he's going. That was a moment right there where I thought, this guy is completely off his rocker.
Garbage dumpster on fire. Oh, and there's this empty wooden flatbed trailer that they pulled out in the middle of the road, and they tipped it over to stop some bearcats, and they lit it on fire. Oh, and he said some bad words. He said the N-word. If he were alive today, like Joshua Zeminski, I'd probably try and prosecute him for arson, but I can't because the defendant killed him. But that's the way we deal with people that do these things. When you commit arson, we prosecute you. We don't execute you in the street. And I'm not here to say that the things that Joseph Rosenbaum did were good or that I condone that kind of behavior. Not at all.
Well, it sounds like you do. Sounds like you don't think the N-word's a big deal. We said some naughty words. Sounds like you don't mind that at all. And no, you wouldn't have prosecuted him for arson because all of the United States had watched cities burn and nobody was being prosecuted for that. And he didn't get executed in the street for arson. He got executed because he said, I'm going to bleeping kill you, and then grabbed for Rittenhouse's gun. But this guy's something, this prosecutor.
But he didn't deserve to die for it. You can't kill someone for these things. He's 5'4", 150 pounds. Jason Lukowski characterized him as a babbling idiot. Lukowski says, I turned my back and walked away. This guy wasn't even a threat.
So is there a certain size where you can exercise self-defense? If somebody's over, what, 5'6", 5'8", 5'10", but 5'4", you can't? None of this made any sense.
I think we all know somebody like Joseph Rosenbaum, the Napoleon complex, the little guy who just wants to chatter. But when it comes down to it, it's all bark. It's no bite. It's like a little dog. Bark, 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 bark. But really, ain't going to do anything.
Okay, so that is the best claim the prosecutor made in his final arguments, was that this guy who, and if we get the defense attorney rebutting that before we go off the air today, we'll share that with you as well. But the reason, according to multiple eyewitnesses, was that the guy, Rosenhaus, said, I'm going to bleeping kill you, and then acted on that threat by grabbing Kyle Rittenhouse's gun by the muzzle, at which point Rittenhouse fired. So we'll hear what the defense says about that. One other thing. Thank goodness there's still some independent, somewhat conservative media, because while so many of the networks were just telling out-and-out lies about this incident and in the year leading up to this trial, there are a lot of independent journalists who were out there who got the video that very well will likely exonerate this 17-year-old. Okay, we're going to check the news for you. And then the big lead at 2 is coming up next here on the Dory Monson Show.